Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining the 2016 preliminary consolidated results and 2017-2019 Business Plan conference call. Now, I would like to turn the conference over to Mrs. Marianne Packe. Please go ahead, madam.
Good morning or good afternoon to everyone. This is our conference call to present our preliminary full year 2016 results and our new business plan. Here with us today are Mr. Andrea Recordati, Chief Executive Officer and Vice President of the company, as well as Fritz Guindo, CFO. I will hand the meeting over to Andrea, who will introduce the proceedings. Thank you.
Very short introduction. Just wanted to thank everybody for being here, and those of you who are present in the room, and those who are obviously connected via conference call. Like Marianne said, we're going to present the 2016 preliminary results, and following which would be Mrs. Guindo presenting, and I will present myself the business plan 2017 and 2019. Okay, so I'll pass on.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea. Good afternoon or good morning to everybody. We are today announcing our preliminary result for the full year, which show margin sales growth and margin expansion, and we are very pleased by this performance in 2016. Consolidated revenue, we see here, we are using our normal presentation. Revenue is 1,153.9 million, which are up by 10.1% and double-digit growth in our revenue line. This line includes 27.7 million, which are linked to the acquisition and consolidation of the new acquired company, Italchimici S.p.A. in Italy and Profarma in Switzerland. Excluding this part, the sales, the organic growth would have been 7.5%, and we continue to have a solid organic growth driven by the good performance of our corporate product. We will see later on, driven by the orphan business development and driven also by a strong performance in some emerging markets such as Turkey and Russia. This excellent sales performance, which is, as I said, is mainly driven by organic development of portfolio, has also allow us to a further improvement in our margin. Now we have an EBITDA at 33.2%, which is up in absolute value by 17.1%. Operating income at 327.4 million, which is 28.4% of sales, are up by 17.6%. Let me underline that in this operating income, in this result, we have included non-recurrent expenses for 12.6 million, which are linked to the cost related to the acquisition of Italchimici, cost related to the reorganization of Italchimici, and we have also included a write-down of some intangible asset in the last quarter, in the fourth quarter 2016. If we exclude the EBIT margin, if you exclude this extraordinary or non-recurrent cost, the operating margin would have been close to 30%. Very solid performance with a further expansion in our margin. Net income at 20.6% is 237.4 million, and here we have an increase of 19.4% over 2015. Solid financial performance, but we are also very pleased in 2016 for important agreements we have closed, we have signed for a further development of the company. First of all, the two acquisition, the acquisition of the Italchimici company in Italy, which has consolidated our business in Italy. We have also bought a company in Switzerland, and now we have one subsidiary in Switzerland of around 15 million euro sales, which combine both the sales acquired through the acquisition of Profarma and the existing portfolio sold by previous licensees in Switzerland. Now we have the right to sell directly. We have another important subsidiary in Switzerland. This is in terms of M&A. In terms of agreement for enhancing the pipeline, we have signed agreement for the commercialization of cariprazine in August. This will be, as we will see during the presentation of Andrea Recordati, an important driver for the future development of our corporate portfolio. We have also signed some agreement in the orphan arena, and in this case we have signed an agreement for the MSUD, which is an orphan disease, in collaboration with the Assistant Public des Hôpitaux de Paris, which is another product in our pipeline. And this is the first deal in one building, in our building, an important franchise in the orphan arena. We have also, always in the orphan arena, in January, obtained the approval of the Cystadrop, which is an orphan drug for the treatment of the ocular manifestation of cystinosis. Then, very positive result from a financial point of view, but also for the development, enhancement of the pipeline, and further development that we want to have in our company. Let's now comment quickly the main product, the performance of the main product. Lercanidipina franchise continued to be stable, slightly growing the combination. The plane is essentially stable. Urorec is growing by around 25%, Livazopit Avastatina by 23.6%. The other corporate product, which comprise 19 products, of which six are OTC products, which are established product, very well established in the market, which continue to grow by 8.2%, and this is mainly driven by the performance of the business in Russia, and also the cross-selling of the portfolio of Kazen outside the Spanish market. Let me underline again that in the other corporate product we have these OTC corporate product, which are up by 11.5%. Drug for rare diseases, orphan treatment for rare disease, orphan business. We have an organic growth in this business by 22%. Then, very excellent performance of the main product in our portfolio. Let's now have a look on the portfolio. This is our product portfolio, presentation of a portfolio. No major changes, but as I said, we are diversifying the portfolio, but all the major products are growing and are contributing to the performance of this 10.1% increase in sales in 2016. Composition of revenue by geography. Italy is now growing by 12.2%, which is also due to the consolidation of Italchimici, but also excluding Italchimici, the Italian business is growing. France is growing by 4%, driven by a local product, which is methadone, plus the good performance of our corporate product. In particular, we are talking about Urorec and Zanextra. Zanextra is the brand name of the combination of Lercanidipina and Enalapril in France. USA is growing in local currency by 26.2%. This is our business in the USA, which is represented only by the treatment of rare diseases. This growth is mainly driven by volume. In particular, we have a significant growth of the corporate product, which is Carbaglu, which is a product belonging to the Orphan Europe portfolio. We have obtained the approval. Now we are launching with a real good success in the U.S. market. Then we have Germany, which is growing by 6.7% with a very solid performance of Ortoton, which is a local product. Turkey is in local currency is growing by 26.8%, and we are doing, this is mainly driven by volume, and we are very pleased by the performance of all our portfolio, both local products and corporate products in Turkey. Then we have a growth also in Spain. We have this small decrease in North Africa, which is mainly driven to The decrease of the business in Algeria is not linked to our acquisition in Tunisia. Our acquisition in Tunisia is growing, and we are very pleased by the development of all the portfolio, in particular by the development of the corporate product in Tunisia. To add corporate product to an existing geography is the way in which we can create value following an acquisition, and we are doing this job also in Tunisia. Portugal is growing, and then overall we have our pharmaceutical business, which is growing by 10.1%. Next, we can comment. This is our presentation of the breakdown by geography, and no major changes in this chart. We have the Italian business, which represents 20-21%, but then we have our presence, which is a balanced one in all the other major pharmaceutical business in Europe. Let's now move on our P&L analysis. The revenue has been already commented. I would like to underline that the gross profit is slightly growing also as margin. This is driven by the product mix because we are growing the business which has a higher margin compared to the other part of the business. SG&A expenses at 32% as a percentage on revenue. We are continue leveraging our organization because we are growing organically, mainly without important, significant addiction in terms of cost, in terms of infrastructure. R&D, we continue to invest in the region of 7.3%. You will see in our business plan this. We continue to believe that R&D is an important source for our development, and we will continue to invest in the R&D. Sorry. Other income, as I said, we have non-recurrent costs for 12.6 million in our P&L, which is, as I said, due to cost for the acquisition of the two companies plus some write-down of intangible assets that we decided to do in the last quarter of the year. Let me repeat, we have a very solid performance in terms of operating income, 17.6 growth, and even more in our net income, 19.4%. In terms of EBIT margin by segment, EBIT margin in the treatment of rare disease is 44.6%, in line with what we have achieved in the first nine months, and slightly increased compared to 2015, but also the same in primary specialty care, 25.2, and 26 if we exclude non-recurrent expenses. It's important to underline that we are growing both the business, the margin of the business, because we are not only growing the treatment for rare disease margin, but also the primary specialty care business, driven by mainly the leveraging of the sales force and the SG&A, is growing its profitability in 2016. Financial position, we have a net financial position at the end of the year close to 200 million euro, 198.8. Which let me underline that in the last quarter we bought a share for around 60 million euro. This is the reason why in the last quarter our net financial position increased a bit more than expected if we exclude this acquisition of this buyback. For sure, this is a very solid financial position. Our net financial position is half of our EBITDA, and we have underlined that we have spent during the year around 3 million euro for both the payment of dividend, the acquisition of Italchimici, the acquisition of Profarma, and also the acquisition of our share mainly in the last quarter of the year, which means that we continue to have a cash conversion which is 101 compared to our net income. And then solid financial position, generation of cash, and very financial result with a further expansion of our margin during 2016. Now I finish my presentation. I leave the floor to Andrea to present.
Okay, thank you, Fred. So the presentation, next slide. Presentation has been divided in three sections. First section is concentrating and focusing on the strategy of a group. Second section is focusing on the sales development and the main assumptions behind the sales development of our franchises. And clearly, last but not least, we will look at the financial projections at the end of the presentation. Moving on to strategy. So, we've had a successful group strategy. It's been proved successful by the results that we've achieved in the last 15 years, and we plan to pursue the strategy in the future. We plan to pursue this strategy by growing organically our portfolio. Like Fritz pointed out very clearly, we are leveraging to our best and to the maximum our current Salesforce organization. And we still believe there's space to grow our current portfolio, both in the rare disease drugs and in the specialty care and primary care segments through organic development. We're clearly looking into reinforcing our product pipeline. I will give you some more details on this in the next few slides, both in primary and mainly in specialty care, in the traditional business, and obviously in the rare disease drugs. And we obviously want to keep on utilizing our bolt-on acquisition strategy, so we're planning to reinforce our presence in our key markets which are, for the moment, the focus is going to be placed especially on France, Germany, Poland, and in the UK. France and Germany because we want to grow more than the market, and what we expect the market growth is going to be in the next few years. Poland because we feel that we still don't have enough critical mass, so we're looking for a further acquisition to build more critical mass. And the UK, where we were present once, but not present anymore, we just have some residual sales that we do of our lercanidipine franchise, managed by a very small structure. We want to re-enter the market if a business case is sound and sustainable due to the arrival of Cariprazine in our schizophrenia drug, which we believe we can promote on the market with a small sales force, very specialistic sales force. And as I said, the treatment for rare disease, we want to develop a global presence. So keep on expanding and entering new markets like we did in 2016. We entered South America, we entered Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, and we also entered the North America, Canada, where we're not present until the end of last year. So we want to move on and keep on expanding globally. Next slide. So we perceive ourselves as an important European player in primary specialty care and a partner of choice for rare diseases because we have a very strong infrastructure for rare diseases, organizational infrastructure that covers Europe especially, but building up in the US and very strong in MENA, probably one of the strongest in MENA. So we want to keep on building this presence and our rare disease. Again, like I mentioned before, we want to keep on growing organically. We want to accelerate, again, like I mentioned before, our growth in European markets, especially in the main markets that I mentioned in the previous slide. We want to keep on, obviously, pursuing growth in the emerging markets, especially Russia and Turkey, where we're having extremely good results, notwithstanding the devaluation of the currencies that we've seen basically for years. But if you look at the actual local value growth, we're still growing extremely strong, like Fritz pointed out previously. Russia grew 22% last year in local currency and nearly 27% in Turkey. And we're seeing this kind of signs and volume growth also in the first part of this year, even though obviously we're talking only about 1 month of actual and an estimation of the second month of the year. I think that it's very important to say that we demonstrated that we pursue our strategies with conviction. We've been saying that we wanted to start diversifying our primary specialty care product portfolio, moving more towards specialty products in the years to come, and the Cariprazine agreement that we signed with Gedeon Richter is a substantial demonstration of this. This is a product for schizophrenia, presence in a very specialistic segment of the market of CNS or neurological disorders. And so it's a good first step to reinforce our presence in the specialty area. And clearly we want to keep on, like we've done in the past, like I mentioned before, keep on buying products and companies where we feel that we need to reinforce our current businesses or enter new markets where we're not present. Which takes me to the strategy for treatment for rare diseases, more or less the same thing. We want to keep on growing organically our business. We have a very good infrastructure present in most European markets, in the US, we've entered South America, we're in MENA. So we want to keep on growing organically our current product portfolio, which we think still has space to grow. We want to fully exploit the product that was mentioned before by Fritz, which is Cystadrops. This is a new treatment that was developed in-house. It's a system in eye drops, so it's for treatment of cystinosis, but in ocular manifestations. And we just got the approval for MENA. So we're preparing now to roll out this product by launching in the different markets. And we believe this is going to be one of the main drivers of growth in the next 3 years for our rare disease business. Obviously, we want to advance our product pipeline. We already have some products in our pipeline. We have obviously Graspa, which I'm sure all of you know and have looked at already. We expect filing of this product in 2017. We want to reinforce our Carbaglu franchise. Carbaglu is our original drug in the rare disease business. It's one of our original drugs in the rare disease business, and it's the most important one. So we are looking at, we already sell it in the U.S. in one indication, which is NAGS. Now we are in the process of filing for the approval also in organic acidemias in the U.S., which should take place towards the end of 2017, and this should obviously expand further the market for this product in the U.S. Not least, we also want to keep on doing, we're actively doing activities on the life cycle management of the product by developing new formulations to go and capture new segments in this treatment. So we're developing specifically an IV formulation and a fast-dissolving formulation. As mentioned before by Fritz, we closed an agreement last year with the hospitals of Paris for a treatment in maple syrup urine disease. This is a product that we think is a good addition to our pipeline, and it's currently in development and will come in the years to come. Plus, we also closed two new pipeline additions to our pipeline for the rare disease drugs. One is for a rare pediatric ophthalmological condition, and another one is in the area of cystic fibrosis. So we are currently and vigorously reinforcing our pipeline. I would like to also add that we have currently negotiations on the table for other products to reinforce our pipeline. A good stage. And as I mentioned before, we entered South America and Canada last year. Now we're putting our attention to enter Southeast Asia with a rare disease business in order to also be present directly in this market. We're not present directly. Going on with strategy on research and development, okay, the plan includes about 8% of investments in R&D. I think it's interesting, it's clearer if we divide these investments, just to explain what we're doing between our two main businesses, obviously primary specialty care and rare diseases. So in primary specialty care, we're focusing on the developing products in the area of specialty care, rather less than primary. On a European business to reinforce this important business, which is still a extremely important cash generating business for our total group. And we're working on different projects in the primary specialty care businesses on life cycle management of some of our key assets, both corporate but also on a local level. We have some important products in some of our countries which are sold only in those countries, methadone in France, ortoton in Enclaversal in Germany, to make a couple of examples. So we're progressing on life cycle management activities to introduce new formulations that reinforce these franchises and protect them before the arrival of generics and so forth and expand the market. Regarding rare diseases, as mentioned before again, we're planning to go further, follow our strategy of going global more and more, entering new markets and reinforcing ourselves in markets we're already present. We're doing internal new product development. Sister Drops is an example. Another product that I will mention further on in the presentation is another example. And obviously, we are also doing life cycle management activities on some of our key assets, like I mentioned before, Carbaglu with the IV formulation and the indication expansion in the U.S. And fast dissolving. More importantly, which I think was demonstrated by the previous slide, that we're pursuing, as I said, replenishment and reinforcement of the product pipeline by looking for, to basically do partnerships with research institutions, biotech companies, and other sources of drug discovery companies. On this point, I think it's important to say on this whole area, for the moment in the plan, we put 8% of sales dedicated to our R&D activities. It goes without saying that if we have interesting opportunities, which we feel have a sustainable and credible business plan behind them, we're obviously ready to also increase these investments in R&D within traditional parameters for a group like Recordati. So without exaggerating, but we believe that reinforcing the pipeline is key for the future development of the group, so we're planning to, if the opportunity arises, to increase this investment. Also, it's important to say that unlike in primary and specialty care, when we look for new products, in the rare disease segment, we are also starting to look for products in earlier stage of clinical development. Products which are, yes, early stage clinical development, but which tend to already have some clinical evidence in this first part of their clinical development, which supports or at least kind of downsizes the risk, which is interesting for business in R&D. Next slide, which takes me to the assumptions for the sales development of a business plan. So we start from lercanidipine, clearly still our most important franchise for a single product. What we can say about this? We can say that basically in our Zanidip franchise, which is a monomolecule, so it's a pure lercanidipine franchise, has stabilized sales through a variety of activities that we do at local level in different countries, the entry of new country, growth in emerging markets of this product, and we are estimating to basically maintain a stability in sales in the years to come around 110 million. Considering both brands and generics, it's a very important point. We sell more or less 70% of the lercanidipine molecule, the API consumption of the product, basically in the main markets value. Zanipress, our combination product, which is losing market exclusivity in the main markets basically this year, but that already just at the end of last year, and which lost it in some countries such as Spain and Portugal already in 2013. In this case, we foresee that we can maintain more or less 30 or better. The generic competition is going to take about 30% of our market by 2019. This is definitely challenging kind of objective, but we believe this is achievable. It's achievable because it's a smaller market than the Zanidip market when Zanidip went out of patent, so less attractive for generic players. It's a lot of generic players that entered the market following the patent expiry in 2010 have actually exited the market because for a variety of reasons, which would take a whole presentation to explain the strategy country by country and what we've done, but more or less we've seen that the API producers of a generic lercanidipine have reduced their production and therefore supply to the generic manufacturers. This means that obviously there's less interest also for the actual generic players on the market to pursue the lercanidipine and other combination. We're launching a new formulation. We're in the process of launching a new formulation that, as far as we know, is not being registered by the generic manufacturers, and we don't foresee this to be the case in the short to medium term. And over the years, like I mentioned before, we acquired competencies market by market because every market is different. Every market has generic. The way generics are pushed in each market is different across Europe. We've managed to basically build some and acquire some kind of skills to kind of, you know, manage their penetration in some markets, in some cases even taking back market share from them. Also, very important to remember is that we're still growing with Lurkin EDP in emerging markets such as Turkey and Russia and in other countries. EuroRec, an important part of our portfolio. This product was launched, it's a BPH product, urology, launched in 34 markets. As you can see, again, the product is still growing, and we expect it to grow and surpass the 100 million sales mark in 2019. We have more or less an average market share of 10% of all the BPH market in the 17 main countries where we launched. The product is extremely well received by the doctors and the prescribers, and more or less every country where we've launched the project, the product is still performing very well. Livazo. Livazo pitavastatin, a statin product, obviously, was launched in 6 markets. We have 7.5% market share average in the 4 main markets in the statin market. We think this is actually a very good result, considering this is one of the most highly competitive markets regarding promotion, and also due to a lot of products being out of patent and for plenty of generics on the market. So we think that we did extremely well achieving this sort of market share. We launched in September in Russia, so we believe that this is going to be a further driver of growth for this product. And we are launching in 2017. In Turkey, we have a very strong commercial organization, and we have good prospects of growth also in this market. So we're expecting this product to grow from approximately 35 million last year to 50 million in 2019. Other corporate products, which were mentioned also before by Fritz in his presentation, this panel of products includes about 19 products, of which 6 are OTC. As Fritz showed, the OTC segment of this portfolio is growing extremely well. It grew double-digit growth last year, 11.5% to 61 million. It's established product kind of part of our portfolio. As you can see, it's an important part of the portfolio because it's more than 200 million in sales last year, and we're planning to grow it to 250 million in sales. But many of these products are non-reimbursed products, so out-of-pay products. The patients are used to buy them, and a lot of them are present in Russia and Turkey, where we see very strong volume growth, and so we're pretty confident we can achieve this result. The main drivers would be Russia and also the expansion of our Kazin Recordati portfolio, which are the products that we bought with the Kazin acquisition in Spain a few years ago. OTC business. OTC business, as you've seen from Fritz's presentation, OTC, if you take all our OTC business units across our countries, account for more or less 16% of our total sales. So we believe this is still an important part of our business that we need to maintain and grow in the future. It's also a way to diversify the risk from the pricing pressures that we see on the more traditional prescription reimbursed products. So we want to keep on pursuing this opportunity to develop it in the European market. We're also looking into cross-selling some of these brands in more countries. We have very good brands in this, in some of the single countries that we think we can bring in other countries, and so selling them in more countries, obviously where there is a sound business case. Our basically expectation is to grow in line with the GDP growth in individual countries. And, however, if we look at the acquisition, let's say, the actual total, our expectation of the total growth of the business, we are aiming for double-digit growth also on the back of acquisition of single products to reinforce our business, your OTC businesses in respective countries or multi-country as well. Preferably, if we can find them, we would like to find products which are present in more than one market with strong brands. And so we're expecting double-digit growth for this. Into the pipeline products. Cariprazine, Reagila. This is a product I mentioned before, schizophrenia drug, an addition to our specialty care portfolio. We have a lot of hope and expectations from this product due to its novel and attractive and strong, we believe, clinical profile. We took the rights for this product at the end of 2016 for Western Europe and Algeria, Tunisia, and Turkey. Why only these countries? Because Gedeon Richter, which is obviously the originator of the drug, is extremely strong in Central Eastern Europe, CIS, and Russia, and so obviously they plan to sell the product themselves in these countries. It's a novel antipsychotic treatment for schizophrenia, which I mentioned before. The product is currently in registration with EMA. We expect to have the registration sometime after the first half of this year. After the first half of this year. So we expect second half approval. And we included some sales in the plan, but considering that after approval, we have to go through all the national regulatory process to price the drug, reimburse it, and so forth, we don't expect to launch a drug until the end of 2018. So we will have very small sales in 2018 in the plan, and then we will start ramping up sales in 2019. The expectation is for this drug to reach more or less 100 million euro of sales per year when it reaches peak sales. Okay. This is a easy-to-use, fast-acting topical spray formulation of lidocaine and prilocaine for the treatment of premature ejaculation. We have the rights for this drug in Europe, Russia, Commonwealth, CIS, Turkey, and certain countries in North Africa. We just recently finished the variation of the EU approval following the decision to commercialize a canister with fewer dosages than the one that had already been registered before, because we didn't think it was commercially sound to launch a canister with such a high number of doses. We expect to launch a product in 2017, and we expect this product to reach about 20 to 30 million euro of sales when it will reach peak sales. This is a difficult product to forecast. It's a difficult product to forecast because there's no real reference market. The only other product that was recently entered this market was a CNS-derived product, Trilogy, and due to the let's say, kind of connotations and perceived side effects and so forth of CNS products, we believe that it's very difficult to compare our product with this one because ours is a pure topical spray, much easier in kind of use with no side effects, while obviously a CNS drug that works on the central nervous system has a completely different profile from this point of view. So we feel that we might have some upside on this forecast that we just presented of peak sales of 20, 30 million, but it's a bit early days to say. Treatment for rare diseases. As you can see, this business is growing from just about 200 million last year to 250 million in 2019. The sales projections at the moment are based only on the current portfolio. Okay, we have no new products in here. Most of the new products I mentioned before are coming all really towards the end of the plan or even after the plan, so they're not actually put in these numbers. We expect to grow overall sales in any case by double digit on an annual basis. As I said before, we believe Sister Drops will be the main driver of growth for this franchise, together also with the entry of Carbaglu in the organic acidemia indication in the U.S., We expect the filing to be end of 2017, like mentioned before. In 2016, this portfolio was, the U.S. component of this portfolio was more or less 55% of total sales of the portfolio. We plan to reach 60% in 2019. So in 2019, the U.S. should be 60% of the total franchise, U.S. sales. Going on to the rare disease product pipeline, and getting into a bit few more specifics regarding some of the key products in the pipeline. The initial sales of Graspa are in the plan, in the indication of ALL, which is acute lymphoblastic leukemia. but very, very initial sales, because we will be, we believe, if obviously everything goes well, to be able to start selling this product only towards the end of the plan. And we are expecting more or less 25 to 30 million of peak sales once outside of the plan, because obviously we're only starting to sell at the end of the plan, but more or less peak sales of 25 to 30 million. Including the plan are also initial sales, but again, like I mentioned before, very initial sales for the products that I mentioned before, the treatment for MFUD, the treatment for retinopathy, and for cystic fibrosis in oral intervention for acute infection exasperations. Exacerbations associated with cystic fibrosis. Last but not least, product that was not mentioned before is a product that is actually coming out from our original research in Recordati. It's a product which for the moment is called REC-0438. This product is a nociceptin analog, and we are developing it for orphan, let's say, or rare disease, orphan condition in urinary incontinence associated in pediatric patients suffering from a congenital malformation called spina bifida. So this is another product that is in the pipeline and it's being progressed in development. Takes me to the last slide regarding the sales development assumptions. It goes without saying that, like I mentioned before, we will continue to pursue our bolt-on acquisition strategy, which has obviously served us so well in the last 15 years. And I repeat, bolt-on, which has been a key success factor, like I said before. And so we have included a component of this in our plan, and which is based on the reinvestment of the cash flow generated after the payment of dividends in the 3 years of the plan. So it should be quite easily calculated for you to calculate it. We're planning, obviously, to spend this money to reinforce our primary specialty care businesses in the countries that I mentioned before, or in acquisition of products rights for specialty care products. And we're obviously looking to invest in the pipeline replenishment for rare diseases, but we are also willing to look at opportunities of acquisition of companies in the rare disease segment, obviously upon reasonable valuation, which we know very well is not very easy these days. To the financial projections. Financial projections are basically, our plan assumes margins achieved in 2016, so incidence on sales, to be sustainable over the plan period. We project our calculation based on current exchange rates. You can take January 2017 as a reference. We assume, like I mentioned before, that we will continue with our dividend policy of more or less 60% payout dividend. Consolidated net income, and the cash flow after payment of dividends will be entirely reinvested for the growth of the group. We have included, like I mentioned before, the bolt-on acquisitions. Takes me to the numbers. You already saw on the press release, I think. You did. So, we're planning to grow EBIT and EPS, earnings per share, to continue to grow double-digit in the years to come. Here we show a growth from 1,154 million in 2016 to approximately 1.450 million in 2019. Our EBITDA is going to grow from 371 to 500 million approximately. This also is obviously a growth in nominal value, but it's also growth in incidence. Not crazy, but it is a growth. We are seeing, for example, that in our 2017 targets, we're aiming at more or less 33%, 33.5% of EBITDA incidence on top line, while in the 2019 targets, we're looking at 34.5% of top line. Operating income is following more or less the same trend, going from 327 to 450 million, and net income has gone from 235 to 325 in 2019. We believe, like I mentioned before, this plan to be challenging, but attainable. I think we've demonstrated in the past that we never kind of overstretch ourselves, but we also believe that we have to set ourselves challenging objectives because the company needs to carry on the growth curve that has been. And so we think these are substantially challenging objectives, but again, attainable. I hope I was clear enough.
Okay, the operator, please, can you open the question and answer period? We will be taking questions both from the floor here in Milan as well as from people that are listening in on the conference call. So we will try and alternate questions as we go along. So could you please start with the first questions? Okay, there is a question from the floor.
Good afternoon, Massimo Vecchio from Mediobanca. Question on Asia. I saw you are targeting growth in the rare diseases. Is it given the peculiarity of the area, different from the growth that you are doing in other parts of the world? Do you see more risk or less risk? And can we expect to see Recordati developing in this area also outside rare diseases or for your standard business, let's say?
For a moment, clearly we sell in this area of the world, we already sell our primary specialty care products, not with a direct presence, but through partners. We do not plan to enter this market in this geographical region with a primary specialty care. Regarding the rare disease segment, this is a strategic kind of intent, in the sense that we are in the process of evaluating. We've entered South America following, let's call it a due diligence and a very kind of close analysis and detailed analysis of the markets we wanted to enter, because as I mentioned before, we entered in three markets, and we entered in those three markets because within the South America landscape, there were ones which we perceived with the biggest potential for rare disease drugs. Today, I'm not in a position to tell you which countries we're entering in Southeast Asia. We know there's potential in those countries. Markets are very different. We need to analyze them. So this is a strategic intent for a three-year plan. So it's not something we're going to do tomorrow. Like I can say that we basically took recruited at the end of last year a manager which is in charge, which is actually based in Malaysia, from the rare disease area, from another corporation in the segment, in charge of putting together this plan during 2017 in order to basically...
Second question, if I may... what multiples on sales do you expect to do your acquisitions, or put it in another way, in 2019, how much of that sales is
three
coming?
Times sales.
Three times sales, okay.
I made it easier for you to calculate now. Okay, go on.
Good. Last question. Are you taking any action, or what's your view on improving diagnostic tests? To increase.
It's not our area of expertise. We perceive it to be a totally different segment in healthcare. So for the moment, we're not looking at this as a segment where we want to enter in any...
Even partnership or anything?
It's, no.
You take it as it is and you try to develop.
There are companies which are specialized in this area, so they go on. There are some areas, maybe in the rare disease drugs, which there is innovation going on the diagnosis of rare diseases, systems to diagnose rare diseases, which are still, it's one of the most difficult areas about this rare disease segment, is actually diagnosing, giving the instruments to the doctors, physicians to actually find the patient. So we are monitoring this area for some of our key products. in the sense that we have looked in the past, but we haven't actually done any partnerships for the moment, but we have looked in the past at products that would help improve the diagnosis of the diseases which are obviously treated by our products. But for the moment, we haven't done anything. Nothing tangible came out of it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Shall we take a question from the...
Maybe a question from the...
From people listening in?
Yeah.
Hello, operator?
Yes, and the next question is from Jo Walton, Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions, please. Firstly, I highlighted that in your rare disease business that you had a lot of expertise, in particular in MENA and in Europe. And this is going perhaps a little bit more along the lines of the last question. You've got to identify the patients. You've got to get them on your product, and then pricing is clearly crucial. I wonder if you could address a little bit more about what some of your skill sets are and why somebody with a rare disease in development would go to you rather than, let's say, go to a Shire or a Genzyme division of Sanofi or a BioMarin in terms of licensing out their product, and what you feel the opportunities are in terms of pricing in rare diseases. And in particular, if we look at something like your Cystagon product, it does appear that there are other competing products like the Procybe product in the US. And I just wonder if you could address that as well, please, the rest of the Cystagon franchise and its opportunities.
So, why do we, Joel, hi, nice to hear you. I was expecting you to be the first one to ask a question from the conference call group. Joel, the first question is, why do we perceive ourselves as an attractive partner, for example, compared to Genzyme or Shire in the MENA region specifically?
Not so much the MENA region. In general, but you identified in particular that you had strengths in the MENA region, and I wondered what those were.
Strength, because we've been present in the MENA region with our orphan drug, call it subsidiary, which is based in Dubai but serves most of the region through a dedicated sales force and so forth. Orphan Europe has been recognized to be one of the commercial infrastructure-wise, main European players. Obviously, we're not comparable to a Genzyme and a Shire, Joanne, that you know better than I do. But we still feel that we have the opportunity because the unmet medical need, the number of products, the specialization in pediatric metabolic disorders that we are very strong in, there's still enough space for all companies basically operating in the segment to find opportunities for new products. I don't have to tell you that there's more or less, from memory, I remember 7,000 orphan diseases that have been recognized and more or less 400 to 500 products actually serving them. So a lot of unmet medical needs. And we are successful commercially. We're a successful operator and a company in the segment. Clearly, more in Europe, MENA, in the US, we're just starting, let's say, but we feel that we're in a good position. And I think this is also demonstrated by the fact that we've added some products to our pipeline recently, products that we perceive have good potential. Next. I hope that satisfies your question, Joe.
Yes, thank you.
Regarding pricing in the rare disease,
pricing opportunities.
No, sorry, can you just kind of, because you asked quite a lot of questions, Joe, can you just like reformulate the question on pricing?
You've had a number of low price products where your competitors have had very high prices, and you've been very disciplined in your pricing, particularly of your existing products. But I'm wondering how you're thinking about rare disease pricing going forwards, whether we'll be seeing you in some of the much higher priced rare disease segments of the market, and whether you are seeing any particular price pressures in that rare disease space.
It's a very difficult question to answer, Joe. I mean, we feel that there will be, due to obviously the situation that we've seen in recent, especially in the last year in the U.S., with the attention that was put on the price increases, hikes done by some, let's say, find them, but some companies that kind of, you know, took it a bit too far with the price increases, which obviously kind of puts a spotlight on the whole sector. So my feeling is that we're going to see a slowdown in this kind of approach of increasing prices on a regular basis beyond the reasonable amounts. We are already present with some products. I'm not going to get into specifics because we can't do that. But we are already present in some of the high-priced product segment, Carbaglue. I can make an example, which is Carbaglue. Carbaglue is definitely a high-priced product segment product. And obviously, like you said before, we are going to keep on being disciplined, especially considering the attention which is put on the subject, especially in the U.S., but not only in the region. Is that a satisfactory answer?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, there's another one, I think.
Competing products for Systagon.
Well, Systagon, we've seen... Systagon, as you know, we don't have a, first of all, it's a product that is licensed in. You know that we don't sell it directly in the US. Mylan has the product in the US and in countries outside of Europe. We have the rights for Europe and MENA and some countries in Eastern Europe. We've already had Raptor come in with Procisbi in European market, starting with Germany already 3 years ago, more or less, they started. They have took some sales, but as you also know, their pricing is, I can't remember how many times higher than ours, but at least more than 10 times more than the Chistagon price. So obviously this poses kind of difficulties for them to penetrate the market, considering obviously that yes, we're talking about rare disease drugs, but the payers are still careful also in this area, obviously, to kind of, you know, give too much leeway to these products, which are so high priced when there is a very valid alternative on the market like Chistagon is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shall we take a question from the floor now, please?
Good afternoon, Martino De Ambrogi, Equita. If I understand correctly, 2019 plan includes some bolt-on acquisition. Just a very rough indication of what could be the guidance like-for-like first. Second, always referring to acquisitions, I remember the old rule of thumb was 1x EBITDA, one as a maximum leverage, financial leverage you could eventually be able to reach. Is it changing or not? And if looking at your presentation, it seems that you are replicating the winning strategy you had over the past few years. Maybe something is changing, correct me if I'm wrong, but the most evident is the acceleration in the buyback, 60 million in one quarter. I don't know if it's something that
Can I start from the last question? You finished?
Yep.
I start with the last question, which is the easiest one. The buyback of stocks was linked to the stock option plan, i.e. we had to buy...
As usual.
As usual. We're not buying stocks because we're trying to do something...
So we are not using treasury shares for exchange in case of deals?
No. We're using them actually because in 2017, one of the few tranches of our stock option plan would become...
Vested,
and so we have to obviously be ready to kind of be able to commit to pay them to our employees that will invest these shares. Regarding the I'm not going to tell you the number that we put in our plan. I would make it too easy for you for the bolt-on acquisition kind of, or for the acquisition component of our plan. But I think I kind of made it very clear where you can see more or less, you know, our one-to-one, and basically we have a 100% cash conversion, okay, after payment of dividends. No? One-to-one? Yeah. because Walter is like going nodding like that. I'm getting worried now. And the professor is like, I've got to watch what I'm saying. So I think we gave you an indication. We stated that we're going to keep on paying 60% of our consolidated net income in dividends, okay? And the rest will be reinvested in the growth of the company. So you can run your models. You know our company very well. You know that more or less the multiple today is 3x sales for an acquisition of an asset. Let it be, obviously it's an approximate number, but we more or less go around this number. Let it be a single asset as a product or an acquisition of a company. Obviously there's the exceptions that go both ways. So I think this gives you an idea of what we put in our plan as growth.
We could also look at it from the point of view of how much of the growth we had is like for like, which is more than half.
So we put approximately, this is a good point. Let's say that in the accumulated annual growth that you can see in our top line, and more or less 50% of that is organic. I cannot be clearer than that.
No, it's okay. Okay. It's okay. That's enough. And the last question is on pricing assumption underlying your guidance. What's the environment today, and what's your assumption? Thank you.
The environment, I think I mentioned it before when I replied to Joe Walton. I mean, obviously, the environment is the one that we're in. The U.S. we perceive that in the U.S. You will not be able to do what some companies, let's say, did in the last few years, which was overstretch their price increases to unreasonable levels. Okay, so we think that since there's a lot of tension on the subject, that we believe that there will be a slowdown. But they basically, if they will increase the price, they will increase them in a very reasonable levels. Regarding Trump, and if you're asking me what Trump is going to do, that is an impossible question to answer. Honestly, I have no idea, and I think that most of the world has no idea. So it's very difficult to predict. Okay, but we also have to remember that the pharmaceutical biotech industry in the U.S. is an extremely important part of a component of the economy. And so everybody realizes, and it's the U.S. is a source of innovation in this sector. So I think there will be, a lot of attention on not breaking this machine. Regarding Europe, we face the same identical kind of reality that we've been facing until now. We believe there will be pricing pressures. I mean, it depends also if you're looking at primary specialty care, if you're looking at rare disease drugs and so forth. Rare disease drugs, we don't perceive there's any kind of danger in pricing pressure in this segment. Regarding primary specialty care, it's as you find balance, country by country, every country has its own policies. And
leverage, whether it's going to be staying at 1x EBITDA or...
Okay. We have included the acquisition of the free cash flow generation during the period, which means that as Andrea said, we have the free cash flow generation, but we believe that we could go above this, but this is linked to the opportunity. We have always said that we have a very solid financial position. We have now an EBITDA, net financial position, which is half of net of the EBITDA. We expect in this business plan to have the same level of debt at the end of the period, which means even less than half of the EBITDA. Then we could also think of different acquisition, but this will be on top of this business plan because we have decided to include, because this is part of our business model. In our business model, there is primarily the reinvestment of the free cash flow. We have achieved our result over the last 10 years, reinvesting the free cash flow and not increasing the debt. But we have also this opportunity, but these are mainly linked to opportunity to be found in the M&A arena. Then, for sure, we have a commitment for achieving this target to reinvest the free cash flow. based on opportunity, based on deal that we can close, we can go ahead of this because we have in our projection a very low level of debt. One time EBITDA could be, but we have no internal clear objective in terms of debt. We are prudent. We have been prudent always in the past. The decision to go ahead or not is mainly driven by real strategic deal that we can close.
Remember that we do bolt-on acquisitions, not only because we don't want to spend a lot of money and take a lot of big financial risk, but also because we believe that the strategy of a bolt-on acquisition is preferable in our case due to the quick integration that we can do of this business. It has a lot of implications across the board, from headcount, restructuring costs. Your pricing point, I think that it's important maybe to, because maybe just to give you an idea, but I think that we can say that the majority of the growth that you see in our top line is driven by volume, okay? Very, very limited kind of price kind of...
James's question.
Yes, hi, thank you. It's James Vane-Tempest and Jefferies. Just have three questions, please. If I can come back to the capital allocation question, I mean, with the net financial position increasing by over 100 million euros last year, if for whatever reason you don't find any particular acquisitions, clearly the capital inefficiency will increase. So given the dividend payout was increased from 50% some years ago to 60%, you know, would the board potentially consider increasing that dividend if the cash pile increases on the balance sheet? Second question is just looking at the margin in your business plan. I'm looking to have stable margins over the period. Just given how profitable rare diseases are for the company at the moment, just wondering whether in your plan you're assuming some margin contraction or whether there's an element of conservatism on your side, thinking about margins in 2019. And then the final question is just thinking about your R&D strategy. I think I heard in the presentation you said that you may look to in-license more earlier stage products. My understanding is you'd often go for products where they're already proven in some markets that essentially have a lower risk. So is there a change in terms of risk appetite for your R&D activity? Thank you.
Okay, a lot of questions again. So first one regarding, I start from the last one, R&D strategy. There is, again, we have to differentiate between primary specialty care and rare disease. Obviously, the risk associated with the development of orphan drug or rare disease drug is risky from the point of view of actually arriving to the final result that one wants. But at the same time, the financial risk is much lower due to the fact that obviously the patient pools are much smaller and you need to run trials on much smaller patient pools. When I also would like to specify that when I speak of early stage, I'm not talking about like a full preclinical, you know, early stage preclinical products and so forth. I'm talking about early stage clinical products. We also have examples of where we look at products in preclinical, but let's say that our main focus would be to, rather than looking for products which have finished phase two or nearly at the end of phase three, like we've done in the past, we're more on the phase three area, we're going to start also looking at stuff in phase one. Okay? Regarding, what was the question? The dividend policy, no, we have no plan of changing this. I understand that maybe Fritz can say something else, but we have a plan of paying more dividends in case we don't reinvest our money efficiently in the mergers and acquisition kind of area. So for the moment, no, we have no plans to do that. And I think that's fair enough. And the margin evolution, I really don't get your question. Because
no, but we said it's sustainable. You do the math and they're growing. So they're saying, if it's sustainable, and it should grow because we have a growing business. Yes, then to remain sustainable, something has to contract.
Yes, if I rephrase the question, your rare diseases business, certainly at the 9 months, was, you know, 47% margin business, and it's growing double digits. So, you know, looking at the rest of the business, you know, considering your organic growth targets, then by default, I imagine margin should be going up over the period, unless there's some other costs which I perhaps haven't thought about. So just wondering, considering your guidance, how we should think about margins over the period.
Okay, then. We expect to have a sustainable, we can say slightly growing our margin, which include also acquisition. Then we can predict clearly what could be the development of our organic business, and here we have our business plan. For sure, we cannot have a clear prediction regarding what could be the increase in terms of sales and margin based on acquisition. Regarding the two business, we believe that essentially we could expect to keep the two business at the same level of profitability because there are different dynamics in the two business. In the orphan business, we expect to invest more in R&D. Then, for sure, we have the opportunity to grow in the business, in the portfolio, but on the other hand, we have seen that we have a program in our pipeline. And even if the cost for a development in the rare disease is lower than the traditional one, we have in any case to finance this clinical development for this program because we believe that the driver for the growth in the orphan business based on the price that we have in possible M&A acquisition, we expect to be mainly the development of the portfolio, the development of the pipeline, and then we expect to increase our R&D expenses. In particular, we expect to increase overall in the business, but in particular in the orphan business. Regarding the primary specialty care, we expect we have the opportunity to launch cariprazine, and then we have included in our business plan all the costs, which are mainly variable costs. We don't expect to increase the number of our sales force, but we expect to change the organization, the structure of our sales force, but we have included all the costs that we have to spend for the successful launch of cariprazine in our business plan.
Which includes market access costs, which include pre-marketing costs, which are already starting now, even though we know that we're going to launch a product at the end of 2000, or the second half of 2019 in the first market. Or maybe also in some markets also in early 2018. It's difficult to predict now, but we have already a lot of costs, which are obviously, so we're going to add very little top line for cariprazine, but we're going to carry in the first 3 years of this plan a lot of costs associated for this product. It's a market that, it's a segment that where we're not present, where we need to do a lot of pre-marketing activity and marketing activities following the launch in order to make ourselves known. We know that obviously it's still a competitive market, even though it's a specialty care segment. There's some established products. But the product in the first few years is not going to bring any bottom line.
Thank you, that's clear. One quick follow-up, if I can, and that is when you consider the specialty areas, CNS is obviously a relatively new area. Are there any specialty areas you're not in, which you would quite like to be in terms of thinking about business development activity? Thank you.
We are, first of all, finding products in, it's not easy to find products also in the rare disease segment, but finding products in the primary and specialty area is not an easy feat. I mean, usually companies that develop this product, they tend to kind of keep the rights for themselves. Cariprazine was a lucky kind of made an agreement, we negotiated an agreement, there were other competitors that were bidding for this product, and we managed to bring it home. But it's an area, basically, where products don't come out that often. And so, like we've always been in the past, we're opportunistic. I mean, obviously, we look at everything, we evaluate everything. We have a bit of experience in CNS because we had a very big franchise for Citalopram and Escitalopram in Italy for many, many years, for the Lundbeck product. So we had the expertise in-house, mostly for the evaluation of the schizophrenia drug, because we had a lot of expertise in-house in the R&D regulatory department for the solo drug, neurological drugs. So it's very difficult to say, oh, we want to kind of reinforce ourselves in this specialty area, or we want to go in there. Clearly, we try and look for products, because in some countries we're already present in specialty areas, but more based on products that we acquired and the acquisitions that we've done over the years. You know, specialty areas can be in, also sub areas of cardiovascular, of gastrointestinal, and so forth. So we obviously, when we look for products, we try and look for products that can have a synergistic effect on promotion based on the fact that we already have structure, promotional structures that already work in those segments or can easily target those segments. But it's but we also have to be very opportunistic because that's the nature of the game.
I think, is there any question from people listening in, please?
There are no questions from the conference call.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the... Yes.
Yes, good afternoon. Bruno Permonte from Banca IMI. Two questions. The first one relates to the timing of the possible acquisitions. Looking at your 2017 targets and comparing them with the 2019 targets, it seems that most of the acquisition you factor in your plan will come in 2018-2019. I wanted to understand if, yes, if this is correct.
It's confirmed.
Okay.
We have no acquisitions in 2017 in our plan. We have acquisitions in 18 and 19.
Okay.
And doesn't mean that we're not going to have any acquisition in 2017. But prudently, in the plan, we structured it this way.
Okay, thank you. And the second one was related to the numbers of the last quarter. I guess that in addition to the purchase of the treasury share, you probably had an increase in net working capital. I wanted to understand if this is correct or not, and in case. What is the reason, and if it is something that will be absorbed in the next quarters?
Okay, regarding the financial position at the end of the year, we will disclose all the numbers in the beginning of March when we will present the full year result with the report. If you compare the, just to give you, I cannot give you the final number, but we have not seen increase in the working capital. We have seen the normal increase in the working capital, which is linked to the development of the company. We are growing 10% our revenue, and therefore we expect in this range also the working capital to increase. If you compare the financial position to the financial position at the end of September, then the working capital was particularly favorable due not to the normal working capital, mainly to some fiscal tax credit, tax advance payment, which are more important in the last part of the year. Then the working capital, including also this account and payable, which are linked to the tax issue, are different. Have a different distribution during the year. Then it's very favorable at the end of September, and we have to pay some important account payable, advance payment in the second, in the last quarter. Then we have a normal increase in the working capital. We have this share buyback, and therefore we will arrive to this net financial position at the end of the year.
Thank you.
Follow-up question, if I may. Did you apply for patent box, and do you expect any benefit from it?
We apply for the patent box. We are in the discussion with the Agenzia delle Entrate. We frankly speaking, we don't know. We have applied. We hope to have... We could have some important benefit because we are a research company, and this is the spirit of the rules, is to give benefit to company which has a strong investment in the R&D, but we haven't included major impact in our business plan because we have to start the discussion with the Agenzia delle Entrate and people which are involved in this.
Thank you very much. Just interesting to know if you applied. Okay, thanks.
Uh, Casey Arikatla from Goldman Sachs. I have one very quick question. Does your plan for EBIT in terms of 2017 and 2019 include integration costs, or is it ex integration costs?
Sorry, I did not get the question.
So the M&A integration costs, are they part of your plan or they're not part of your plan?
M&A cost in terms of, no, we have included an overall impact which include both revenue, cost. We have not included in this business plan extraordinary cost which could be linked to the acquisition. Then we will see then if there is in 2019 some acquisition for which we have restructuring, then this is not included in our business.
Honestly, it's nearly impossible to kind of predict something like this in a three-year plan, because we don't know what we're going to buy, and if it's going to be a product, it's going to be a franchise, if it's going to be a company with structure that we need to restructure. So just for the top line.
Thank you.
Excuse me, sirs, there is a question from the conference call,
yes,
a follow-up question.
Please.
From Joe Walton, please go ahead.
Thank you. Just three quick ones. Of the 10% sales growth that you saw in 2016, I wonder if you could roughly break out what was organic and what was the first-time contribution from Italchimici. Secondly, looking at your 2017 forecasts, it looks like you're expecting about 10% growth for the Orphan Europe business. But this is a business that grew 22% in 2016. So is there some particular reason why that will not grow as fast in 2017? And a third question, just if you could help us with your assessment of the current market environment in both Turkey and Russia, where you have been growing very strongly. Do you believe that the rate of local currency growth that you've seen in 2016 can be replicated in 2017?
First question was, we have included and are included in our objective in terms of revenue 2017 around 22 million, which are linked to the acquisition of Italchimici, which means that the organic growth in our objective for 2017 is in the region of 4%, which is, let me say, lower than what we expect for the full year, for the other year, because we expect in 2017 the entry of the generic competition for the combination, and therefore we have to manage competition, and we expect for the franchise, you have seen in the presentation, the franchise of Lercanidipin, including the combination, to decrease in 2016. That's the main reason for this lower level of organic growth that we have projected in 2017.
And in 2016, what was the contribution roughly?
As I said in the conference call, in 16, the contribution of Italchimici and the Profarma business was in the region was 27 million, which means that excluding this, in 16, the organic growth would have been 7.5%.
Thank you. I missed that on the call.
7.6% organic growth in 16.
Thank you.
Regarding the other question was in Turkey, Russia.
No, and then also the growth for Orphan Europe was 22% in 2016, implied 10% growth in 2017 or in the plan. So why are we not going to grow that fast?
Because we're cautious, Joe. No, it's
because in our orphan business, sometimes the growth is also linked to identification of new patient. And this was essentially the case in the U.S. market for Carbaglu, and we don't expect to be able every year to identify and to add to our orphan business the same number of new patients. Then there is a different business model, the orphan business, compared to the primary specialty care. It's also linked to identification, in particular in the extra ultra rare business that we have based on the Carbaglu and also our Cystadane business, that is mainly driven by identification of new patients. Then, in our business plan, we have included a normal level. Why? I can say that we expect and we think the 22% organic growth of the business in 2016 was a bit extraordinary, linked to some number of patients that we have been able to identify, as I said, in particular in the U.S. market. Then we believe that could be even the same case in 2017, but it's difficult, as Andrea said, to forecast this level of new patient, which are very rare and difficult to find. And then we believe that overall we expect our business is the rare disease to be able to grow double digit. This is our objective. If we are able to identify more patients, could be a bit more, but I think double digit has been the history. We have been growing the business over the last 10 years, and we expect this could be a challenging objective. And to confirm and to have 22% organic growth every year, we believe is not achievable.
And Russia and Turkey, market environment, currency growth.
Okay, regarding the market environment, again, it's a bit of a difficult question in the sense that we know the situation in these countries. However, we have no clear signs that we should be expecting any negative impact on our business in these countries, for reasons which are obviously linked to the realization that the governments of these countries have no interest in pushing out foreign investments by attacking them in one way or another. So we still believe, like we showed with our numbers, that we are going to achieve high, strong volume growth in this country. We just opened a new factory in Turkey as well, which we invested $50 million over the last few years on building. And so we believe this country, obviously, it's a difficult situation. No one has a crystal ball, but we don't foresee in our plan, and we honestly don't foresee any issues for our businesses in this country.
Thank you.
Regarding the currency, the question is what? Do we expect it to devalue more, or is that it, Joel?
No, there was no question on that. I was only looking for your local currency growth, you know, what you were expecting to see in those local markets.
No, here again, yes. We have achieved extraordinary result in 2016, 26 and 22%. We have projected double-digit growth we believe are sustainable. And then, as usual, we'll try to do our best to exceed our target. But we cannot project in a business plan 2017, 2019, a 20-25% local organic growth with the current portfolio. Then we have done a very solid and extraordinary performance. We try to do our best in the future. In our business plan, we have projected a double-digit growth, but not to the same extent that we have achieved in 2016.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. If there are no further questions from the floor or from people listening in, I think we'll close it here. Thanks for attending, and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.